Welcome to Syncifying Syncify. On the show, we find the best content on building your startup. We then sync up and explain our biggest lessons to you, the listener, and try to apply those learnings to our own startup, Syncify. We look at what we can do as a young startup, building the future of social audio, and give some insights into what really happens as you build an idea into an actual business. I'm Sam Harris, your host and the CEO of Syncify. This season, we are syncing up over the Y Combinator Startup School series of lectures, which are a really good resource for anyone trying to build a business or launch something. You can also join the Y Combinator Startup School for free yourself online if you're interested and enjoy the content. I'm delighted to be joined the entire season by my co-host Jack Hughes, who is both my best friend and business partner here at Syncify. Guys, we're so pumped to bring you the third episode of the Syncify podcast, going into how to work together perfectly on the whole Syncify thing about being together with people. This is very important because the main reason that startups fail is either they run out of money or the founders fall out. These are the main two reasons. And sometimes this kind of happens like collaboratively, like so the founders fall out and they stop doing things together and they go in different directions, which means they run out of money. Or they start running out of money and the founders start to fall out and it kind of self-enforces itself. So if you can always keep the founder part strong, you're less likely to run out of money and everything's going to be better, essentially. And to do that, you need to be able to work together. And it's kind of in the same way that they say you should like marry your idea, you should kind of be marrying your co-founder because of you need to be able to have a good relationship that can last for 10 years, according to some smart people. So this is why it's very important. And you don't necessarily have to always get on perfectly the whole time. And people do fight and they disagree and they have different things that they want to achieve. But you have to be able to understand each other. And there's a lot of things that go into a relationship that you need to just acknowledge and spend time on. So in the lecture that we listened to, he talks about the kind of things that normal relationships experience and what people fight about. And it's money, kids, sex, time, jealousy or in-laws, the main sources of conflict for a normal relationship. And he then sort of equates this to things in a startup. So money is the same as money, fundraising and runway. Kids is like your customers and employees, the people you care about. Sex is like the performance of the startup. Time is, well, your roadmap. How much time do you have to do these things? Jealousy is competition. Are you looking at other startups thinking, oh, isn't that cool? And in-laws is like the partnerships, the companies that you work with. And so there's kind of lots of sources of potential conflict to arise in all of these topics.
The guys at Y Combinator have a really good way of simplifying and getting down to like basic things. So money, kids, sex, time, jealousy are like majorly things that everyone can just be like, oh yeah, I know what that feeling is. Well, you know what that feeling is. So now let's look at it in a business perspective. Being able to identify is pretty cool.
They then identify the four horsemen of problems. So the four horsemen are one, criticism, two, contempt, three, defensiveness, and four, stonewalling. And these are kind of the big things of when you're having an argument that make it go sour and don't lead to a constructive argument, which are the types of arguments you want to have. So criticism, instead of kind of talking about things in a constructive way, you just sort of put people down and you just sort of say, oh, well, you maybe don't listen to the partner who's perhaps like saying you didn't do something perfectly. And then you just sort of attack them being like, well, you're really crap at this. And you just sort of start like having a shouting match and it's not useful. Well, instead of being like, oh, maybe I should wear a t-shirt. Thanks, Jack, for pointing that out. I could be like, well, your beard looks super arsey, like pube face Jack here telling me off. What a dick. That's not a useful answer. So good example. Nice.
Contempt is going to something with the intention to insult someone. So like you're approaching an argument or a discussion and you kind of want to make that person feel a little bit bad about it. So it's a little bit like criticism, but the intention you have at the start is actually to put that person down. So for example, if you and I have a meeting, I'd be like, you're pretty bad at facial hair. Like my intention is to make you aware of your faults. I've had that like kind of feeling of contempt towards you. And I want to make you aware that your facial hair disappoints me.
So as in it's more kind of like expectation of criticism. You're just already looking for the bad. So as in if you'd be making a few mistakes and I was kind of annoyed with you, I'd just be quite critical of anything you happen to do already are just only looking for the bad things that you're doing rather than sort of having an open mind.
Yeah, and it, like, you're going to mention them, like you intend to, which is not conducive. It's like being a barnet about the way someone's working and they're just kind of carrying around with them and they're like looking for opportunity.
Interesting. Good. Defensiveness, the third one. So that's where you are not open to potential constructive criticism and you care too much about your ego. Like, well, actually, it was this other person's fault and like I made the best decision. I'm great. And you don't actually learn so much and you kind of put a blocker on actually sort of getting to the best results just by trying to like prove yourself right, which is a useless trait and comes up in principles in many places. And the final one is stonewalling, where I guess you just ignore people.
It's important to point out, like, it's about like owning your own stuff as well, like looking at the top, the six things we mentioned, you know, money, kids, sex, etc., and that coming down to fundraising and roadmap partnerships, all that stuff. Like, defensiveness comes when it comes into your realm of responsibility. So if you and I, for example, were talking about fundraising or organizing something in the diary or whatever, and then one of us messes it up or misses it, and then we're both at loggerheads about it because, well, who's responsible for it? And like, well, there was actually no one ideally responsible. So we're both being defensive about something.
Even though it's both our responsibility to actually sort of bother to check who was going to be the one doing it. Or maybe my responsibility if I'm sort of saying that I'm the CEO and I should be making the top decisions, these kind of things. But defensiveness means that you should be open to own ownership, but you shouldn't be running around trying to own everything. Just because you're not being defensive. Good. Anyway, I then go into sort of talking about making a plan before you fight. So kind of having a constructive goal to it. Okay, so we disagree about something. What's the main thing that we're disagreeing on and what's like the end result that we need to achieve rather than kind of just fighting for no real reason, which is kind of hard to do in the moment. But if you sort of can step back before you sort of jump into like, okay, what's the disagreement about? Or if you know that you've been having like differences in opinion in a like decision, you can like book a meeting and okay, so we've got 20 minutes. This is the thing that we need to decide. It's holding us back from like achieving our goal. We need to make one way or the other. These are our personal reasons why we think this way. We need to like listen to the other person and then achieve an end goal that we can definitely act upon. If there's no way that we can kind of reach somewhere in the middle, like the other person's just going to have to like say that they're going to agree with you and go forwards and like have a vote, these kind of things, which when there's more than two people, it's easier to have a vote. When it's just two, it's a bit hard. But have you heard of like the disagree and commit rule? I'm not sure if this was came up in the lecture, but that was a thing at Amazon where they say maybe a decision for a meeting doesn't go the way you want it to, but you have to just commit your everything to it because otherwise you can kind of end up sabotaging what the agreement is. And it sort of is a useless agreement if people actually don't get behind it. If they sort of suspected that it should go the other way and then they kind of never work towards the thing that went in the direction they didn't want it to, they end up kind of making it a self-fulfilling prophecy of it failing by not going in their way, which goes back to defensiveness and proving themselves right as opposed to actually helping the company reach its total goals. So yes, make a plan and actually sort of stick to the things that you agree on and divide and conquer. So instead of kind of all being slightly responsible for everything and like set like clear responsibilities so you can easily just own that area without feeling like the other person's taking over. But then he goes a bit more into actually understanding yourselves as people. So know thyself, and they go into attachment styles. So there's three main types: the secure attachment style, the anxious, and the avoidant.
So the forms of attachment style fall down to secure, anxious, and avoidant. A secure person is someone who is pretty well rounded in themselves. Obviously, they're the opposite of insecure. So generally, they're happy to give people relevant and important information without the fear of them divulging it in unnecessarily. They're happy to delegate workloads, all that kind of thing. And they don't need that much contact time. They're basically like the ideal boss or employee.
And most people kind of think that they're probably a secure attachment style, but actually like they're not.
And then it falls down to two other people. So it's the anxious minded person or the anxious attachment person. That's someone who naturally needs to have like their head petted every now and again. They need to be told they're doing a good job. They need to have that tactile relationship with the people they work for. They need to generally be part of the groups and they need to make sure that their work is valued and they are valued in the workplace, because otherwise their mind tends to get a little bit dotty and they want to feel that appreciation. And avoidant is someone who completely doesn't need any of that. Like, you're doing a great job. Everyone loves you. They tend to walk away and say, like, I'm just going to get this done. I don't really care if other people know what I'm doing. I definitely don't need to have like endless meetings about it.
Probably a blend of all of them in different ways. As in certainly describing that, I feel like I can identify with all of those descriptions in different ways.
I mean, I know that I'm the anxious type.
As a human, like, I still like do need a bit of attention and do like having some security from people. And I'd like to think of my avoidant things are more like the Skewer was in, like, I don't need attention all the time and I'm pretty like happy and I don't care what people think about me too much compared to others perhaps. But yeah, I think I'm definitely an avoidant if you sort of put me through the test. Like, I kind of don't have time to listen to people, and when they're kind of constantly talking about stuff, I'm just like, I just need to do the stuff. Like, leave me alone.
If I say that I'm the anxious one, and then you've got to say, look at some secure one, you aren't like me in the way that we, just because you're not part of two groups, you kind of have to be part of the other group.
It's just useful to understand the different styles and where you may have those different styles. I think you can be naturally more secure and more anxious around different people just because of how they sort of make you feel initially, you know what I mean? And aware of like how your environment changes yourself and all these things. So anyway, interesting psychology stuff. So it's good to learn up a bit on yourself and your other employees. There's also like the Myers-Briggs test and things like that, which you can do to understand each other better, and certainly worth doing with your founders. And often people do it with all their employees and try and do it like once a year. It's just a nice way to understand each other and like better communicate in ways that are easy for each other.
Yeah, and it comes down to conflict resolution as well. The next thing they talk about in the quote is like, when you are something to me, I feel something, and this makes me something. Would you be able to something in order to help me? Like, that's a conflict resolution starting tool that you can have in pretty much any argument, any marriage, or anything like that.
When I observe something, I feel an emotion like angry or sad. So it's like, when I observe you not doing the dishes, I feel annoyed because of, I need more time and I feel like you don't respect my time because you're leaving the dishes for me all the time. Would you be able to sometimes wash up the dishes?
Yes. And that's really good, because when you go on to the next point, you need to anchor something in observation. And it's, so it's concrete. So you can't say like, well, sometimes you don't do the dishes, because that's the observation.
So if I just say, Jack, I just don't think you respect me at all, like, you're being really a dick, it's a bit random. Whereas if I go like, oh, well, because of the dishes are there, like, I sort of feel a bit disrespected. It makes a lot more sense for him, and they can kind of work on that.
Exactly. And your argument, and this is really true with all arguments, if you can't anchor your observation in something real and something shared that is clearly obvious, then you're allowing people who are potentially better at arguing or debating you to slip their way out. So for example, you don't evaluate, don't go, you're sloppy, or don't generalize by going like, you're always making a mess. So those two comments. But if you say you don't clean up the dishes, that's way better than an evaluation or generalization.
It allows the other person space to sort of defend themselves and often open up your own mind to perhaps why you maybe don't need to feel that way so much. Because when you ask one person in a couple who does most of the housework, everyone always reckons they do about 70% of the housework, because they just don't see the things that the other person does so much. So, I mean, if I'm always doing the dishes, perhaps you're always doing the cooking or like other things. I don't really notice that it takes you as much time as it does, and you just sort of don't quite account. So in the same way that like Jack's maybe complaining that I've taken too long in dev, but hasn't noticed a lot of these other things, I'm like, well, Jack started the Facebook page, well, that's not very difficult, or what else has he been doing? And like, maybe it does take him a long time to put these videos together and all this stuff, but like, it seems like he hasn't got as much results as I have perhaps. And so it's very easy to not notice the work that's going on from someone else at a surface level. So if you sort of don't attack them, but just sort of say what you've observed, they can sort of point out what you haven't observed, and it makes it a lot easier to actually talk about these things.
That level of transparency, which I think is really important. If you like saying, okay, well, it encourages them to be like, well, actually, I've been doing this. And that kind of leads on to, I guess, the final section of it, which is following on from the transparency, the founders having level 3 conversations regularly. So level 1 would be like emails, basically CCing each into emails. Level 2 conversation would be like a phone call or an email that's directed towards one another, whereby we just kind of exchange a little bit. There's like a little bit of what we're talking about. And the level 3 would be like, what are our/your short-term goals for a company? Are we using the right metrics? Like, are we hitting goals? Those kind of like level 3. It's incredibly important to have as many level 1 conversations as is necessary in order that things don't stack up, so you don't cause emotional debt. I thought that was one of the most important parts of what he was saying, is because you and I are actually really good at this. When a little thing annoys us about each other, because we've known each other for ages, we just say it immediately. It's like, this annoys me. And we don't care about how the other one feels about it, because we've just done it so many times. I feel that like naturally, founders who know each other very well and can have those very vital conversations to begin with and get on stand a far better chance of working together in 10 years, as opposed to like people who come together based on a business opportunity, because they're going to have to spend loads of time with each other. And those like working relationships can very quickly dissolve. Like that working relationship in a startup can very quickly just become a relationship. And if you aren't willing to kind of go to bat for your co-founder or respect him or understand like the things and get and be okay with little things they can't change, they're going to piss you off, you're in a whole heap of shit. Like, you are really not going to do very well.
Yeah, then you can start a successful business with someone you've never met before and it work out, but it's sort of unlikely. In the same way that you can meet someone and end up marrying them, but it doesn't happen very often. You have to meet quite a few people and try with them, and then you find that there are some problems that didn't seem so obvious when you first started. And so yeah, it's certainly handy to really understand someone at a deep level. So if you think you know people that you might want to start businesses with, it's worth just trying to spend time with them anyway and just do other things, just a groundwork for potential, like in a year's time, if you're thinking about things. If you know someone better and you've done, like, you've been on holiday with them and those kind of things, you have a much better chance of understanding potential problems that could arise between the two of you. Good.
So going back from the beginning, when we're talking about the money, kids, sex, time and jealousy and in-laws, I think you and I were pretty good right from the word go at deciding like who is going to be kind of in control of what and who that falls down to. It sometimes the lines are a little bit blurred. So it starts with like the fundraising, and then it's going to be the customers and employees, and then probably lead on to like the performances and the partnerships. And it's, at the moment, a lot of it is you, and it's slowly kind of blend, and then it will be me.
Well, it started as like all me, but then as you've come on board, I've sort of kind of given up ownership of most of those, really, whilst I've been just trying to focus on dev. Like, so this last week I've been basically like, actually Jack can just do everything and I'll just be coding and I'll show up when they need me for like investor meetings and these things.
Exactly. And I think that's pretty fair, because we need to get something out the door at the moment, and I think you working, getting that out the door is fantastic. That's what we need to do. And yeah, I was going to mention again the anxious and avoidant, and he said the best working relationships are usually anxious and avoidant, and I think that you and I are probably that. I think having like the secure person in my mind tends to be either like the head of HR or maybe the CTO, someone who's like quite calculated and is there as like almost it requires slightly less feeling, because the partnerships, it's not to do with the employees, it's to do with kind of making sure the nuts and bolts are there. Whereas you and I are very passionate about the company, but our different personality profiles separate us a little bit, which means we're naturally better at doing the other things that each other aren't good at, which is pretty perfect. And also we've known each other long enough whereby you know that I'm probably more anxious and I kind of need the pat on the head. Whereas I know that if you disappear for a couple of hours or a day, I know it's not because you're running away from me or the project.
And it's useful for like other people that you work with, because I mean, I work with quite a few coders who will literally disappear for like weeks on end, and like to the point where like, I've had some of their people's parents like message me being like, do you know what's happened to this person after sort of something's happened in London of like bad news, and they like can't get hold of them. I'm like, oh, they're fine.
Exactly. And I think when you're employing people as well, you have to have a really good understanding of that. And that's why I think references are so important, because if you don't have someone who's willing to bat for that person, because what Syncify is going to be is like very heart and soul-y. It's something we've been working a lot recently, is making sure we absolutely love what we stand for. And so if you have someone joining your company, you need to be able to have those conversations that analyze whether that person is going to be one way or another, whether it's going to fit into a team and in what team that's going to be. And you can judge someone pretty quickly on whether they're saying they're being observational, evaluative, or they're just generalizing. I think that to begin with, you and I were probably more generalization / evaluation, because we're friends and we're getting into business with each other. Whereas what we've managed to do, I think, is start to anchor things a little bit more to observation. But you don't generally need to do those observations in friendships. It's very rare that you need to have those kind of discussions where you need to like actually solve out a proper issue. So you generally just tend to say like, hey, you look like shit today, or like, why are you always late? And in business, what you have to do is create those observations in order to move forward. So that's something that you and I are going to become better at, but we still have a bit of a head start, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Certainly, if you think about the fact that, you know, you are a bit sort of anxious and I am a bit avoidant, it helps that we don't worry too much about, as in taking on a new anxious person, I'd be a bit more worried about like trying to give them the time that they need, because I wouldn't know how to do that as such. And you might like feel a bit more put down when I just tell you something a bit bluntly and I'm like, this isn't good enough, if I haven't sort of made it, polished it and made it awesome. Whereas you kind of know that I kind of do understand that you've done lots of good stuff when I sort of point out like the bad thing. But it's also like, you know, on me to actually start getting better at sort of being like, okay, so you did X, Y, and Z and X was amazing. Y was a little bit like, could be better. Like maybe try this. And then Z was also great, rather than being like, okay, Y was a bit poo, can we just fix that? which is obviously like the thing that your brain goes to, because that's the only thing that needs to be fixed, but you kind of need to point all this stuff out.
I totally agree. And actually, one of the questions at the end of it that was asked was like, what do you do if your co-founder is actually like not a personable person, doesn't really care about any of the staff, is just mission driven or product driven? How do you do that? And a classic example is like Steve Jobs or Elon Musk, I'm sure is an absolute nightmare to work with as well. And the guy who was doing the lecture, he pointed out like a couple of things. He said, A, I believe that there's absolutely room for companies without that profile. He said, you don't necessarily need to tolerate that. If you think that person is going to be your absolute success and be all and end all, then look at that team a little bit more closely. But secondly, he said that there have been instances where that person is such a strong person and he might be like a co-founder or whatever, but he's almost an employee in his own right. He's like a lone striker, and you actually just give him the work that he requires and you create him just a functional job where he just is a function in the team and in the company. And just because he's a co-founder, he doesn't necessarily be that a patriarchal figure and that very human resourcey, lovey-dovey culture vibe person. And I thought that was quite important. And if we were to hire someone in the future, like let's say when we look for a CTO or we look for those kind of things, if that person isn't necessarily an amazing cultural fit and isn't a lovey-dovey, isn't kind of like giving you the space that you need or giving me the attention that I need, it doesn't necessarily make that person a poor fit for the company. It just means we have to be able to willing to change the way we look at stuff in order for it to work. It was a very strong lecture. And the thing that you always hear is every negative emotion is an unmet universal need. And if you can have conversations as founders based on that, like I feel scared rather than like saying I feel blamed or I feel misunderstood, is actually I feel frustrated. If you can fulfill each other, then you're going to be okay. That was my main takeaway from the whole thing.
It's a big thing based on communication. And certainly, I think we'll try and read nonviolent communication and cover that much more in depth on here, because it's going to be so useful for not just us, but also working with employees and all your relationships in life. I think it's one of those books that apparently has been growing a lot. So summarize, everyone fights. So just make a plan and try to make fights constructive, figure out the roles of who does what, have the hard conversations now. If it feels like it's a hard conversation, don't put it off. Do it as quickly as possible. Use nonviolent communication. Share honest feedback and pay down emotional debt regularly.
Don't criticize. Don't go into a conversation with the intention to insult someone. Make sure you own your own stuff so you don't become defensive, and definitely have a conversation rather than stonewalling.
Cool. All right. So on that note, I hate you and never tend to talk to you again.